Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. For those of you joining us for the first time, Bad Storytellers is a podcast about a small group of amateur writers who submit and critique each other's work as well as discuss the written media we consume. It's like a book club but with a wider focus. Our group submissions are shared on our website, badstorytellers.com, and you can download them there if you'd like to read along with us. Additionally, we also accept your submissions for critique. If you would like some feedback with the same candor that we give each other, send in your submission to badstorytellers@gmail.com. Entries must be 10 pages or less. Additionally, at the end of each show, we roll the dice, pick three genres, and come up with a movie idea. Once we decide upon a name, we record the trailer for your listening pleasure. Enjoy. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Bad Storytellers. I am your host, Josh LaForge, and with me today is Liam Malone.
Great minds.
Max Wessel.
Sorry.
And Doug Banks.
Hello.
This is going to be a little different. We are launching a new podcast coming up. It may have already launched by the time you guys hear this.
I'm hoping it already launched.
Yeah, I hope so too. It's called RPG From Scratch, where the four of us call ourselves the homebrew hombres and come up with our own tabletop game and playtest it. So in honor of that, instead of creating a trailer at the end of this, we're going to roll the dice and create a setting for an RPG that we do a little bit of light world building, and you guys can hear us talk about it.
It's going to be hardcore.
That's a joke that no one gets.
Yeah, nobody will get
that joke. Congratulations,
Max. Until episode six. Oh, my goodness.
This is bad storytellers, not bad joke tellers.
It is definitely both. Okay, what have you guys consumed?
I got a new favorite show. It's called Great Minds with Dan Harmon, and it's just the whole story is – I don't know if you listened to Harmontown, his podcast.
No.
He has a podcast called Harmontown, and he plays Dungeons & Dragons with a guy named Spencer. And Spencer is his dungeon master, and when he went on tour, he brought his dungeon master with him. And Spencer's kind of this cool, nerdy character.
It's a lot,
that
it's
I like.
Lot better than a hype man.
I think
it's a lot more useful.
Bringing your own dungeon master is a thing. So the story
Who shall master my dungeon whilst I am gone?
So the story is this guy, Spencer, invented a time machine where he brings people from the past to go hang out with Dan Harmon. And it was like,
What is this on?
It's on the History Channel.
Okay.
And one of them was Idi Amin. One of them was Hemingway, one of them was Edgar Allan Poe, and they just make terrible pop culture jokes. How horrified they would be at just reality currently.
I feel like I'm going to have to binge this.
Oh, I did. That's as soon as I did it, I binged all of them. I just love – they're 15 minutes long. They're perfect. Great comedians play out all the parts. Ron Funches is Idi Amin. Yeah. Ron Funches is Idi Amin. It's so
favorite.
Good. Another thing I watched was this like high school coming-of-age story called Ashby, where Mickey Rourke is an assassin. And he befriends a neighbor next door, and then they kill people. It's a pretty good movie. I liked it
Sounds
enough.
Sounds fun. Sounds like The Matador.
You ever see that?
Or
yeah.
The Professional.
Yeah. Only funnier. Kind
of, yeah, well, The Matador is a comedy.
And the other
Gross
thing
point
I watched...
Blank.
You happy now? You just talking over me? Another movie I watched was ACOD, Adult Children of Divorce. And it's just about a middle-aged man dealing with his divorced parents. As his younger brother's getting married and they can't be in the same room together and he's trying to negotiate this wedding that they're going to have.
That sounds way too close to real
reality
problems.
Dude, it starts out so real and then it gets fucking insane and I really, really liked it.
Oh, I can't wait to see
Clark
it
Duke is in it, and anything that Clark Duke is in, I'm kind of already halfway on
board
with.
I can get down
with
some Clark Duke.
I like Clark
he's
Duke,
no
man.
Steve Zahn, but...
I don't know who any of those people is, but the name Clark Duke sounds really fun
totally
to say.
Rad. Yeah.
Have you ever seen the Hot Tub Time Machine franchise?
I've seen commercials for it.
He's the youngest guy.
Have you ever seen Sex Drive?
No, although I have a friend who was in it.
Clark Duke is in that.
You can see our dicks from space.
You can't. That's not.
Am I wrong in that, Doug? Did our good friend?
No. Oh no, he was in it.
He was in it.
He put a dildo on a donut.
Yes, he did.
In that movie. Oh, good. Okay. That man's name is Matt Ramsey. I don't want to leave him out. Yeah. He's an excellent actor.
Shout out to Matt Ramsey.
If you're a producer or a casting agent, I highly recommend him. He is a ball to work with.
You will not be disappointed.
Not at all.
He hugs real good.
Yeah, he's a good hugger. And he can grow
and a good handshaker and a hand kisser because he learned that.
He played Prince Charming. He was a Disney prince. Yeah. In a Disney World.
Do you get to choose?
He's my Prince Charming.
Or is it like random?
What do you mean, which hand?
No, if it's like a hug or a handshake or a kiss.
I think it depends on who you are.
Okay, good.
I got a hug.
Yeah.
I like a nice handshake.
And I bought Ecstasy from him in a movie. It was pretty cool.
I was like, well, this narrative is going. So he's an actor who sells ecstasy. Hey, producers, get him
in a movie.
No, it was a movie.
Yeah, it was a movie.
Producers like Coke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They're not Pepsi people, huh?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, more, as I say, they're more Diet Coke these days.
Well, Coke is its own diet in a way. Well,
they're baby boomers mostly. They're not the Pepsi generation.
Although that makes sense.
Some of the Pepsi generation is moving into producing roles now.
Yeah. You know that the Pepsi generation isn't a real generation. Or Generation Next. I think that's what we're calling it after for a while.
So let's move on. So anything else you consumed?
Pepsi? No, I played a lot of music and went to a bunch of parties.
What about you, Max?
I am trying to finish Game of Thrones. The wife and I are powering through that. It's pretty dope.
I love when you call her the wife because mm-hmm. she's not your wife.
Yeah,
she's the wife. Wife. Mm-hmm. So she's a universal wife,
embodiment of what a wife.
Right. When you say the wife, it's like she's a resource.
What a coincidence! I've been hanging out with the wife too.
It's true.
She didn't mention you. I don't know what the deal is with that.
It's not. They're all aspects of the same thing. I think
it's really true. Is. Oh, I started watching The Wire today on a whim, and
I have that. I haven't watched it.
I'm addicted to it so far.
People say that like after season like 3 or 5.
I'm so tired of that shit where people are like, it was going to get better.
Well, no,
it
but
should
they
be
like
good in the first season.
They picked like a specific one. They're like, after mm-hmm. this season, it becomes the best show ever.
The first season has me pretty hooked. So
cool. So maybe you're in for a surprise.
Way better than that Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, man. I'm still with you. I'm almost done with season 4. And
I just my beef
so
with Deep Space Nine. They had that civil war that was going to happen, right? And then, like, 4 episodes deep into the season, they don't even talk about it anymore. They're like, we're going to arrest you, and it'll come to a trial. And
they'll
he's
talk
like,
about
it'll
some
be a great
later.
Trial. Like, that was something that should have been dealt with immediately. That was an overthrow of the government. And they're like, we're going to let the courts handle it.
I think everyone is tired of us here talking about Deus Ex 9 and Jurassic World. I think we're going to retire them. We're retiring them right now.
I think we've talked about Deep Space Nine way more than Jurassic World. But I'm tired of hearing about Jurassic World because I know you people. I know you guys outside
you
of
people.
This podcast.
I'm you people.
Well, no, you and Doug specifically.
Yeah. Let's take a vow.
A vow? No.
No.
I'm not doing that.
Get the knives. We're going to cut ourselves and we're not going to talk about Jurassic World anymore.
I might see it and then I'll talk about it. I reserve that right.
I don't want to.
Anything else?
Not really. Just been writing. Cool. Watched too much.
Well, we're going to talk about your writing.
Cool.
Doug, what about you, man?
I downloaded Inigo for Skyrim.
He's a companion in Skyrim.
Yeah, it completely pulled me back into Skyrim, and now I'm doing all the DLC that I never did back in the day. I'm doing Dawnguard, I'm doing Dragonborn, and it's all with Inigo, so everything's new to him, and it's new to me, so it's a lot of fun.
It's new to him.
Okay. Other than that, I've been reading, I've been trying to read more books about writing specifically for television, because another project I'm working on with Nerdy Show is Lightning Dogs, and I can't go into details about what I have written for Lightning Dogs, because that's what the show Lightning Dogs is for.
What is Lightning Dogs?
Yeah, explain, so Liam and Max don't know what Lightning Dogs is.
Okay, Lightning Dogs is an idea that was sparked on a regular episode of Nerdy Show as a joke, and it spun out of control, became its own idea. What it is now and what we're trying to make it a cartoon show that can be enjoyed by children and adults on the same level as, say, Legend of Korra.
So the premise, Thundercats. Yeah,
No, it's not Thunder. The joke was that it was the opposite of Thundercats.
Exactly.
But what it is now is, but what it actually is now is more original. It is a group of anthropomorphic dogs from another planet called Domus who show up on Earth in search of the what they refer to as the Masters, which are humans that accidentally left them behind like 2,000 years ago, and they want to know what happened to humans when they get to Earth. They
it's
see
the,
that
the
world
the ultimate
is
dog like yeah. pet dog sob story.
It's
like your dog ran across the country to get home.
Mine went through the galaxy, yo.
Yeah, these ones evolved on their own to get intelligent and everything. They get to Earth, and it's been destroyed. It's a wasteland, and they're trying to figure out what happened while fighting off the weird yet hauntingly sexy Glampire, which is their main menace, their main villain, which is a sort of androgynous David Bowie kind of elf-like, vampire-like enemy with mystical powers. And in the first episode, they become the Lightning Dogs because the machine that sent them there explodes, and it gives them all these crazy superpowers.
Uh-huh. So that other podcast, are they prettier than us or what?
I wouldn't say prettier, but I would say it is definitely more free-spirited creativeness.
Well, of course.
Cap's got this magnetism that I just cannot place.
Well, it's the Kevorka.
Place it on him.
Without going into too much detail, I would literally talk for another hour about it.
Like, consumed his books about...
Specifically, one in particular was this book called Elephant Bucks, which is actually more about TV comedy sitcom writing. Enjoying it, I feel it's a little outdated, but it's still got some interesting stuff in there. But if anyone can recommend any television writing books other than, like, one specifically for comedy, I'm interested, and I'm going to try and read them.
Cool. As for me, I haven't really consumed a whole lot. I also don't have a submission this week because my life went haywire for a little bit. So I rewatched Children of Men.
Of course you did.
With my mom.
Ooh.
And she liked it a lot.
It's a good movie.
I'm convinced that in maybe 50 years' time, it might take the number one film spot from The Godfather or Citizen Kane or Seven Samurai, whichever one is first.
You know, is this why you asked what you asked on Facebook? Hey, name the best hero in cinema.
Yes,
I maintain. I stick with mine.
Me too.
See, I don't know, because when I think of heroism, it's almost like there's something innate within somebody, and it's not them overcoming themselves as much as it is like, oh God, this needs to happen, and there's nobody else here that's going to do it. I'm going to do it, and that lady, I think her name is like Marika or whatever. In that movie, she doesn't speak any English. You never know what she's saying. But the moment that Sid sees the baby, she's like, she sees a baby and she pushes her own dog away from it. She's like, go away. And then she sees that the other guy's there. She's like, oh no. And she starts hitting him. She's like, bad man. And he has a gun. And the second she gets the opportunity, she beats him over the head with a rod. I mean, she gets them to a boat. Like, yeah, if you guys haven't seen this movie, it's amazing. But she basically the moment that she could do something good for somebody, she risked her life to do it.
Has anyone on this podcast not seen this movie?
No.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Mine was pre-Serenity Valley Malcolm Reynolds.
Really?
Yeah.
Mine was straight greatest of toaster. All.
Greatest of all cinema?
Yeah.
No, most heroic. Most heroic. Not bravest.
Most heroic. But like, I don't know if you saw my pitch there, Josh, but it was... Idris Elba in Prometheus.
He's pretty good. I would actually put the main character in Prometheus ahead of him, that lady.
Maybe because she was more reluctantly in that situation towards the end, whereas Idris Elba was like, hey, as soon as this thing goes bad, I'm not letting it get to Earth, no matter the cost. He drew a line in the sand. And then as soon as it's like, all right, let's take off, alien ship takes off, he's like, fuck no. And like just immediately made that decision. He's like, anyone wants to leave, leave now because I'm doing it. Like there's nothing you could do to talk him out of it.
What about the queen in the alien films?
No.
She's just trying to spread her family. Single mom.
I know, and she's so mean to her at the end, which she called her names and stuff.
Yeah, that was uncalled for.
So let's talk about our writing.
Hooray.
Yay.
So I got two submissions this week, one from Liam, one from Max. And they're both two pages, roughly?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Liam's first.
Okay. Going back to Goblin PI, because I'm not taking a break from Fox and the Ox. I just started sitting down and describing just the subcontinent, like, culture. And I'm like, that thing is like 3 pages long now, but I'm not done with it yet. As soon as that's done, I'm just going to bring that in. And it's just describing how things work mechanically so I know what's going on.
So you pulled a Max?
I'm going to pull a Max. Yeah, totally.
Give him a good tug.
Pull on some Max. So instead, this is something I just like kind of wrote up in the last 2 days because there was a bitchin' barbecue on Sunday. And I'm just looking for the Goblin's voice in Goblin PI. I need to figure out who... Because if everything's going to be in his first person, his tone is super important. And I think this is the closest I've gotten to it. Because I don't want him to be too cliche and like, oh, I'm so gruff. It's too much. But also, I want him to be more just disinterested in everything. He's like, I'm just going to do my job. I don't care anymore.
Cool. I mean, I thought it was good, especially once the lady actually shows up. I had a real hard time understanding whose voice I was hearing. Like, not because the voice wasn't consistent, but because I didn't know where we were.
All right.
I didn't know where we were until three quarters down the first page. And I think you could handle that in the first paragraph. You know, you start with his voice, and it's like, and you say like, yeah, that's the kind of stuff I am. Me, a goblin detective, you know.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, where he views himself a little ironically, you know, but he could refer to himself that way.
All right.
I think that would help. That would have helped me a whole lot.
Okay.
Through this. Because I didn't, when he's like, I didn't realize, I forgot which one was Bowman, and I wasn't sure who stood up between the two of them. Uh-huh. Because when it starts, I don't know, I wasn't sure. He says something about his height, but you don't mention that he's an orc at that point. I don't know. It's, like I said, I just didn't have enough context while I was reading it.
Okay.
I was going to say, I like the way you're building Bowman as a separate entity from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very laconic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then, Watson-esque if yeah. Watson was 6'8".
And an orc.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, already was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he was.
In the original manuscript.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, the editors made him change.
But it was just a really racist term that it was terrible.
What? Yeah, they prefer Uruk-hai.
Well, I'd say I can see what you mean by like trying to find his voice, because his voice felt a little inconsistent with me. An example would be he says, oh, you know, he makes these observations like, you know, with these elves, you know, the girl with the pointy ears, sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. I don't really know how old she was. It was really like this. And then like a couple sentences later, he's like, well, I know how to find out how old she is, and she's this old. So I was like, well, wait, do you... You know, he's at one hand, he's saying, it's really dismissive. Like, they all look alike. They all look like the same age. They could be 20 or 50. I don't fucking know. But I do know. And she was this. So, like, you know, if it's just sort of one or the other, like, I think what would be, like, the most what would interest me the most is if he says, oh, most people look at elves and they can't tell the difference if you're 20 or 50. But I know this one's 50 trying to look 20because of the wrinkles behind her ears, you know, or something like something that you can make up that would sound really cool.
And if you make it feel like more like he's having a conversation with a person, if you made it feel like he's actually talking to you in the sense that like, you want to know how I know? This is my little trick. I'll let you in on the secret. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. Because he can be really observant without being interested. Like, you know, you want him to be very dismissive, but he can still say things offhand of just like, oh, clearly she's trying to get my attention. I've heard this a million times. Look at her already. She's got this. She's got this. Man, all right, let's just get to the bottom of it, right? Like, let's just go through the dance, you know, whatever. And he can still be disinterested, but give us his point of view of how smart he is without making him sound kind of like schizophrenic in terms. Well, I shouldn't say schizophrenic, but contradictory, where he's like, I don't know, but wait, I do know. And then, like, all the other little things that, to me, were an opportunity for him to show off his prowess, like when he says Bowman stands up and he's just like, he's over 6 foot. Exactly how much, I don't really know. I'm like, dude, he's your partner. Like, you would know, like, off the top of your head just by looking at him. Like, oh no, dude, I'm an experienced detective. He's 6'5", even though when he's wearing his boots like he is now, he looks taller. You know, like, one thing like that can just really separate, for me at least, like, his nail down his point of view, because when he says, well, he looks like this, but normally he's like this, it, like, that can also come off as dismissive. It doesn't have to be like him caring about every single thing. And the only other thing was this back and forth between she comes in. Well, all right, I lied. There's two things. The one thing is that she knocks on the door. She goes, are you guys the detectives? And I'm like, is there a sign on the door? You know, like, she should know. Mm-hmm. But other than that,
we got two grizzled receptionists.
That would be a great line. No, we just have two grizzled receptionists would be funny.
No, the real detective isn't here. We're the two receptionists. Like, that's funny. That's because I didn't know where they were. Like, were they in a bar and this happened? Like, I didn't get, like, that she was coming to their office at first, but then I understood. But the other thing was she goes back and forth. Like, as soon as she comes in, she goes, I need to talk about your rates. And they're like, well, we got to talk about your case. And she's like, no, I'd rather discuss the rates. And they're like, well, we need to know your case before we can discuss the rates. And then Bowman's like, yeah, because if the scope of the case is like this, then, you know, the price is different. And then your goblin PI is like, well, what my partner means to say is that I can't give you a rate until I know how much work it's going to be. I'm like, dude, I get it. Like, he literally just said that. You're like,
yeah,
repeating
belabor's the point.
Yeah, like, it would be cool if he says, oh, well, like, she comes in, I'd like to discuss the rates. And Bowman immediately, if he's hitting on her, is like, oh, well, darling, we can't discuss the rates till we know what the scope of it is. And then the PI could just cut to the second half of his line where he's like, or what kind of folk we have to deal with. You know, so it's like clearly the size of it's not mattering to him. He wants to know what kind of asshole is he dealing with. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so even that can tell me what's our detective really concerned about and versus whatever. And then you would skip right to the point. So, you know. But other than that, man, no, I'm digging the world. I'm digging the whole – you're trying to put the twist on, like, you know, the girl coming in and, you know, he's already two steps ahead of her. He already knows – he kind of already knows the deal. I'm really anxious to see where it goes because the whole fantasy setting mixed with this noir is totally interesting to me, of course. So, yeah, keep it up.
I'm excited to see the deterioration of his –
psyche?
Yeah. Yeah, because he's like, ooh, you know, we're going to be respectable detectives.
I'm very defensive about everything, yeah.
No, and he's like, we're going to get, you know, people are going to know about us. And then he's like, I know in the future that's not what he's looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I just had difficulty reading it for problems that I might have had. I might not have had those problems if there were two paragraphs ahead of it or if something else was peppered in it. But I dig it. I want more. Let's talk about Max's.
All right.
What'd you bring in?
I brought in a piece I'm working on called The Order Militant. It was inspired by a Bob Ross painting. I was watching...
After having read that?
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
Okay. So there's a Bob Ross painting, The Edge... It's called like The Edge of the Forest or The Edge of the Woods. And I was watching it. And he paints... There's a part where he gets... He's trying to do the light coming through the trees. So it's green. And there's like these small like monoliths that are just there. And I just had a vision of like... It looked like World War One to me with like a mustard gas attack. And I just had like the image of a guy like down against the fence with like the gas choking him and just like a battle angel like be like, nah, it's cool. Raise you back up. And then I got the story of this guy who will join a fight between like good and evil, but like where it's not objectively good or evil. Each person has a scale that they are on. So like an evil person can't kill an evil person. And a good person can't kill a good person.
What? You mean like physically can't?
Well, just like, yeah, they're just not, they wouldn't. So you're going to go through an operation. Like if he's going on a mission later on and he needs to kill a guard, but the guard is good, he can't.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because he has powers now.
Yeah.
If this person is pure of heart, he can't hurt him.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Does he know it until he tries?
You're going to be able to see. It's going to be he.
Like he reads his aura or whatever.
They have a, you guys know what the Akashic memory is?
No. I thought you were going to say like a meter over their head.
Yeah, no, everyone will – he'll have that.
Oh, okay.
But Akashic memory, like it's a – I don't know if it's Tibetan or what, but it's just all knowledge is stored in a library that's accessible to the mind. So he's going to have the experiences of all the angels and everything accessible, but not instantly. So like it's something he would actually have to think about. But if he wants to find information, that's something he can access.
It's kind of like the if you had a chip for the internet in your head.
Yeah, but it's just the memories of everyone. It's not straight answers. It's memories.
Okay.
I just got the inspiration for that, and I decided to start writing. And that's a mind dump of what I got.
See, I thought this was related to the story that you were going to tell. And I was like, oh, interesting that he's going to Europe now, and they're still called Germans. You know, like this is interesting. So a lot of the feedback I was going to give you was –
what are you doing?
Oh.
Well, no, it was just in like relation to that story.
To that story. No, this was a separate
okay
thing that was inspired, so I just wrote it real quick and
yeah, it's good. I mean, I like the descriptions of the shells landing and how they know immediately that it's a chlorine gas shell. When he's talking about his mask, I'm like is he like a courier for a ceremonial mask across borders? Like, what does it mean? I'm like, oh, never mind, his gas mask.
Yep.
Like, I get it. I don't know. I dug it. It's written well.
Thank you. Yeah, I was doing some weird research, like morphine use in World War One and that kind of stuff. Could be an interesting.
As you're wont to do.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It just coincided with writing this time.
Like, I need a time machine and a drug dealer.
I can supply you with one of those.
I was going to say, we...
Oh, shit. Do I a 50-50 shot, man. I got a time machine.
We've discussed the morphine before. It's not something I would want
to
write out.
How long does it take somebody to die from, like, mustard gas? Because this guy carried on for a while and actually started to fight pretty well until,
In this story, it sounded like literally 5 seconds worth of combat.
Yeah, it wasn't very long. He was kind of... The morphine would counteract, you know what I mean? Like we were talking about the morphine puts away other things,
So
like,
well, I mean, just because the reason why it felt long to me was because he's laying there, he breathes it in, it's already burning him, Then the guy jumps into the trench. He sees him kill like five people. Then he gets the strength to get up, still breathing the gas, then jumps on him, fights him, stabs him 15 times, then collapses. And I'm like, that seems like a long time, but you know. But that's really my only question. And like, I liked everything about it. I think it took a while.
Yeah, because chlorine gas, you're either going to be dying from being poisoned by it or suffocating from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a quick death. I think it's one of the reasons mustard gas is now completely forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for use in war, because it's just horrifying. You choke
so bad,
and the way it creeps in is just a cool thing.
I like the way you described the way the guy would like size up everybody before he killed them, and this is before the context you just gave about people's auras. Because at first I was just sort of like, oh man, like this is really interesting. Why is he doing that? Like, is he looking for somebody in particular? Like, you know, but like that piqued my interest so much already. And now knowing what you told me, I'm even more interested. So I really dig it. Want to see where you would take it.
Thank you. And I want to try to avoid the allies are the good guys, other guys are the bad guys kind of thing to show that there's.
Yeah. Well, World War One. I mean, there's no good guys. There's
extreme
no
bad guys on every side. Yeah. You know?
It's just, oh, if we don't do this horrible thing, we may not be a country anymore. You know, like it was horrible. World War One is a quagmire.
I feel like most of my critiques of whenever I'm discussing anything Max writes is like, this is great world building, I just want to see a character thing happen. Whereas I feel like this is like one of the first times I'm just like, dude, I want to know. Like, just this is great. I like you. Everything I need to know about this guy to get me interested in where this is going is just in here. Like, he's just the situation of him dying but giving this other chance, clearly there's kind of magic in play or whatever. I feel like this is, you not only have set up, you've started to set up a world, but you already haven't explained everything about how it works. It's just enough to keep me interested, and I wanted to keep reading. So that's like,
thank you. That's progression. It's like I'm learning.
Well, it just didn't feel like a brain dump. It felt like you were, you know, like the actual beginning
of the
story.
Thinking about the characters as they're brain dump now.
Yeah. But it's awesome.
That's
though.
Good. Appreciate it.
Well, that's all the critique we had about our own work. We moved through that part pretty quick. Let's do the fun stuff.
D&D is good for me.
Are we going to do three?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, screw it.
All right, so I've got the... Do I have them here? No.
You got the new list? New list of genres? You said
I got it right here. Okay, so we're going to roll the dice. We want to do three?
We want to do three.
Okay. Yeah, three.
We're going to roll the dice three times to get three genres, and this will be the kind of campaign that we will world build in. Liam, go first.
All right, let's do this. We got 48.
48. Counterfactual history.
All right.
This is a bad storyteller genre if I ever heard of it. Referred to as virtual history, it is a recent form of historiography which attempts to answer what-if questions known as counterfactuals. It seeks to explore history and historical incidents by means of extrapolating a timeline in which certain key historical events did not happen or had outcome which was different from that which did in fact occur. The process of this exercise is to ascertain the relative importance of the event, incident, or person the counterfactual hypothesis is negating.
Have I told you guys I really like Harold Turtledove?
Yeah.
He does
alternate
history.
I was going to say.
Yeah,
I think I've mentioned him before.
You've mentioned him at least once.
Should we decide the event before we keep rolling?
No.
All right. Max next?
Max next.
I think we should pick a list of events and roll the die.
No.
Six, right? Or nine?
Nine.
Nine?
Nine? Okay.
009.
Comedy of manners. This already is sounding pretty great. A film satirizes the manners and affectations of a social class, often represented by stock characters. The plot of the comedy is often concerned with an illicit love affair or some other scandal, but is generally less important than its witty dialogue.
PG Wodehouse.
All right, give it up for Josh the Forge, everyone.
All right,
up for the rolling.
Last genre.
Josh.
61.
69.
Magical realism.
Ooh.
Also called magic realism, is literary works where magical events form part of ordinary life. The reader is forced to accept that abnormal events such as levitation, telekinesis, and talking with the dead take place in the real world. The writer does not invent a new world or describes in great detail new creatures, as is usual in fantasy.
My thing is, someone is sexting the dead, and that's like against the manners of being able to talk to the dead.
Well, why don't we choose an event that we change the outcome of that makes magic real?
Tesla?
Nikola Tesla, that's a good one. There's The Burning of the Library of Alexandria. That's done a lot. Our friend Adam wrote a whole book about what would happen if...
See the library. Yeah,
yeah.
What alternate thing would happen that would cause magic or talking to the dead to be real?
The druids never die.
Yeah, there's just druids forever.
Oh, sorry, not druids. The beaker people. The ones who built the henge. The big one.
The Stonehenge?
Yeah.
There's a really good...
stone?
It's a two-part book series. It's about Alexander the Great not dying, and he establishes an empire through the Middle East that keeps Europe from rising. It's pretty interesting. So, like, Middle East and African countries take America and South America.
What if it's more recent? What if America completes the superconducting super collider that we were going to complete in the 90s that had something like... Let me look up the stats on this thing real quick so you guys get an idea.
Like, when the first run through CERN actually does all the bad things.
I was only thinking of, like, the past. Like, what if Ponce de Leon actually found the Fountain of Youth, and the reason why it was a Fountain of Youth was that it actually had magical properties, but then you could dissolve the magical properties and be able to apply them to different things. This way, by the time you get to, like, the Victorian era, where there's a definite, you know, class system sort of involved of ethics and morality and manners and stuff, magic is already commonplace by that point.
Houdini being convinced that you could talk to the dead.
Like Fish Called Wanda with Mitchell and Webb in Victorian England with magic.
Ooh, Fish Called Wanda.
Okay, so basically, you guys are all aware of the Large Hadron Collider that discovered the existence of the Higgs boson, or rather confirmed that the Higgs boson was a thing. 20 years ago, America was slated to complete a superconducting super collider that had a length of 54 miles.
Holy crap.
It was way bigger than the one underneath Geneva. And Congress killed it because they thought it was too expensive.
Too expensive to do awesome stuff?
Yes.
Just like the space shuttle.
So this makes...
So this thing would have been able to collide particles at 5 times the energy of the Large Hadron Collider.
What the fuck?
I like what you're saying, but what if New Coke had, over time, gave people magical powers?
Crystal Pepsi. And that was the new generation?
Like, they let it go on for 20 years.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And this over time, it builds up and people are starting to talk to the dead.
That's, you know, that's a valid one, too.
I like Hadron Collider.
No, it's the superconducting super collider.
This is our first year of getting to know each other, and I'm starting to realize you're like, okay. fuck no. Absolutely no. Not going to happen.
What did you fucking expect with New Coke?
I know. But I just mean in general, it's great to see him like, okay.
I know how to deal with you now. Yeah, I'm compartmentalizing. It's fine.
My new one is, that is an interesting idea.
Use that with your kid a lot.
No, he doesn't really talk too much yet.
Yeah.
Oh, I will, though.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's a fascinating way of putting it. But here's something that isn't really fucking stupid.
Olive Garden for dinner. Interesting.
Yeah. You could choose not to eat your broccoli, yeah. I suppose.
However...
Why don't you eat your broccoli instead and be healthy and not make me liable for malnutrition?
What? Dude, what the Hadron Collider, man. Dude, the Hadron Collider is just the starting point.
What's saying here is it had only 1/10 the beam luminosity of the Large Hadron Collider, but because of its higher energy, it would have produced about half the Higgs events seen at CERN. So let's say fuck that part of it, because we'll just it's five times more powerful. That's it. We'll just stick with five times more powerful.
Well, or we could even go back to the reason why history has changed is that magic is actually just real and you can talk to the dead and it changed something.
But there's an if it's counterfactual history,
we need I got it. Harry Houdini was always debunking people who said they could talk to the dead until he found the guy who could.
I just said that 5 minutes ago, motherfuckers.
You did?
When you're talking about New Coke?
Before New Coke.
Right? Literally, he slotted in right before New Coke. So it was like, great idea. No, wait, New Coke.
Sorry, man. I didn't hear you. You were lost in the
I know.
I'm trying to think of how we create an aristocracy where we can make a comedy of manners out of
I don't want to do a comedy of manners set in the 90s.
Well, no, you can if there's a new magical aristocracy of, like, scientists and stuff.
No.
Okay. So a comedy of manners set in a...
I want to make fun of Victorian England because that's the most fun thing to make fun of.
I see what you're saying, but isn't Friends a comedy of manners?
Yes.
Yeah, but I've had most to read Jane Eyre too much to not make fun of it.
I get what you're saying. What if it had zombies?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm prejudiced against them.
Of mice and men and zombies.
My pride won't let me.
Of mice and men and zombies would be awesome.
All right, but for real though, let's get back into this comedy of manners. An aristocracy can pop up in 30 years, right?
Yeah, but then we're making fun of a made up aristocracy.
Okay, so what if it is a magical intersection happens, and now people are trying to become, they're trying to learn the protocol of like this magical race that lives through the little hole that we can look through.
But it turns out they're demons.
Well, if we're going with Liam's idea, what if, like, telegraphs let you speak to the dead somehow?
No, again, we need an event. We got to remember all three things.
Some guy would invent that.
The problem is that...
The French Revolution didn't happen because all of the aristocrats found magic.
No. What we're talking about are great movie ideas.
Yes.
We're talking about a campaign where you have to have players and a DM. And what you're talking about is just like, okay, now telegraph. This is what I want to say to him. And it's like, DM's like, okay, it says, you know, this,
I
stop,
forgot
this,
we were making
stop.
A campaign and not a movie. All of my ideas have been movie.
Even the New Coke one?
Even New Coke, unfortunately.
Damn, man. That's a winner.
Yeah. Okay, campaign. I see where you're going.
That's why I was like, this thing happened. Or some kind of intersectionalism where an event happens and it opens up a portal or whatever. And now there's a new aristocracy for people to emulate. And they have to so we're the first humans going through a portal that was created by this thing, and we are trying to act in a certain way according to their customs, but their customs are just too strange. That could be an RPG.
Yeah.
Or a Harry Houdini. I don't know how that could be a campaign. It's like you could talk to the dead.
No, you
like,
need a bigger. You need
well, it's
a
more than
event.
That. Like you discovered that magic is real. Like he found out real magic happens.
No, you need a bigger event. You need a like because.
Right, but okay. Well, no. Let's see. So. Take us down the road, Doug.
Because the whole thing, anybody who said they had magic healing powers, anybody who said they could talk to the dead, he was always trying to debunk them. But then in his travels, like
no,
you've explained
that part. I'm saying take us down 50 years from then.
Okay,
where's our comedy of manners? Like, where does that leave us?
What was it was comedy. Of
okay,
manners,
well, if it's like 50 years later, then it's like this is like 1950s. So think of like height of 1950s,
Mad Men.
Yeah, it's like Mad Men, except people in power can just learn to use magic. So there's a whole class of people that, you know.
Ayn Rand, like objectivism, actually gave you magical powers.
We are so far off from
this. We're not talking about campaigns.
Yeah, no, all right.
No, I'm thinking a campaign.
I'm saying.
No, I mean, if people had telekinesis.
So that's the world,
like,
right? So that's the world. What would the campaign be in that world? Okay. Like, what group? A group of people are sent to do a thing in a 1950s Mad Men style world where magic is real because it was discovered in 1900.
Yeah, no. Pick an event further back.
I'm trying to think aristocracy, right? Because
well,
that's our comedy of manners.
My aristocracy would be the factory owners and stuff who are just now have power and they're putting the world how they want it to be.
Okay, where's the adventure?
We could be going against them. We could be working for them.
Okay.
How about this? Magic is a thing, so we don't need to use shipping lanes. America is just literally never discovered because we don't need to. We just teleport to wherever the fuck we need to go. No one invents ships to go anywhere. So then you hit the Industrial Revolution, and then someone's finally like, oh, there's a whole fucking other continent over there. Holy shit. Yeah.
Would you need the Industrial Revolution if magic was real?
Eventually, probably, yeah, because if you're going to have an aristocracy that is controlling magic, yeah.
Would it just turn into the Harry Potter magic sort of world where, you know, they don't have electricity and shit?
No, they'd probably rule with an iron fist, because that was kind of more the mode of the time.
Now, I'm thinking...
Where's the humor? We got to think about it, because we're getting hung up on, like, the reason why magic exists as opposed to what is the humor, the comedy of errors, you know?
No, the comedy of errors, I think, is the last thing we discuss. What we need is the counterfactual thing that makes magic exist.
Or that magic makes something counterfactual.
And then take us down the road from that event until this comedy of manners can happen. We need to end up somewhere where there's an adventure that can be had, and then it becomes comedic. What I was thinking to Max's idea, which is there's factory owners, there's this and that. So an emergent technology crushes an industry. How about that? So it becomes a kind of Wild West. One aristocracy is replaced by another a little too quickly. So there's new money versus old money.
All right.
That kind of thing. And the players would be trying to start a new business.
Entrepreneurs. I like it.
And they've got a product or something or some kind of they're starting like the first magical ferry service. We can ferry you anywhere, over land, over sea.
To anywhere, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You ride in this, and that's all we're doing. You go to places, you negotiate, you take people on your boats, people try to rob you with their magical powers, and it's like the Wild West with magic powers.
I like it.
That could be a comedy of manners.
Can we mix them in a little Sliders? That episode where the all lawyers and had guns?
No.
Court cases were solved, like...
I appreciate the Sliders reference, but no.
The business world would be more brutal.
So you just go back in time 100 years, is basically...
Well, I'm just saying, like, the business world would be more brutal with these aristocratic, you know, like...
And it would be interesting if there's the old money. Some of them are frantically trying to learn magic, but they're way behind, like, some bum in the street who found out he had a talent with something and is now... Has a scholarship to the Mage College or whatever.
I feel like this would make a great like dinner party role-playing game as opposed to like a traditional tabletop campaign.
Yeah, but I feel like that if they run a magical transport service, your adventure is sold, right? Like,
yeah. You know what it is? The magical transport service. The campaign isn't just, oh, let's just transport. I mean, yeah, it can be transporting people, but the hook to make it like a true adventure is – in order for them to build their own shipping lanes, they have to transport to different areas and like stake the claim to that land. But since it might be through wilderness, they have to like make multiple jumps, cutting through different places, not entirely sure of where they're going to end up when they jump through the other side. Like they have a good idea, but they're not 100% sure. And sometimes you jump through the other side and you land on someone else's land. It's just some dude with like the equivalent of like, you know, a redneck with a shotgun. He's like, what are you doing on my property? Except it's the magical version of that. And it's like, sir, we're here to buy your land.
That would be very funny. And he's just like, who are you trying to take my land? You tried to take my land, and he like raises his hand, and a giant red hand comes out of the ground. You know
exactly.
Like, I'll take
yes.
you. Land's yeah. gonna take you, sir.
Yeah, it's like it's There Will Be Blood, but funny and with magic.
Yeah, I'm for that.
Yeah.
All right. So what's our event? Because now we need the counterfactual. So we've got our setting. What's the event that caused this?
Instead of drilling for oil, they hit mana.
No, because this is a thing where people now can start doing magic, and it's like the Wild West. So the Changing of the Guard happens because of some new discovery that everyone has access to if they look into it.
Polio vaccine.
Never
Too
occurs.
Recent.
And it turns out having polio makes you magic?
No, the polio vaccine gives certain people magic.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking something of an interdimensional race is dying of some kind of magic plague that doesn't affect us, and they send an arc through a magical portal, and it lands on Earth, and it's got all the knowledge of magic, but they die immediately because they can't breathe the air. So now we just have all this shit.
All deciphered from those texts.
Right, and somebody, like a printing publisher, got it before the government did. So now everybody can have
remaking it.
Yeah, everybody can have it.
What is it? What's the humorous situation that arc showed up in? Like when that arc showed up with a ship full of dead creatures from another dimension, what was the humor situation that
the
it
World's
just
Fair would be pretty funny?
If you
just write in because
it's like here's all the science. Look at all the science, and they come through, and it's wizards and stuff, and
what if it was
dragons, and they all just die?
If your story comes true, I want to remake Newsies in that universe.
That'd be cool
because like these little kids are just handing out the forbidden knowledge.
Extra, extra. Get your love spell. Extra.
Unrestricted cosmic power can be yours.
This one says if you fast for 14 years, but you say these three words, you won't die and you can become a lich. God, imagine a redneck lich.
That's on the campaign. That's just one of the encounters.
Yeah, redneck lich.
Okay.
Y'all's I like trespass this campaign. In here.
So what, like,
what's its name?
Decay will rise again.
The South will rise again. Yeah. As zombies.
And again, and again, however many times is necessary.
He's like a necromancer and he just, all the hounds he's had over the years rise up out of the ground.
Okay, so that's our setting. Let's do what we do with RPG from scratch. Let's break the world apart. So we need rednecks. It's America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Wild West has still not been completely claimed.
So the event that this happened in is not the World's Fair of, like, 1900. It's earlier?
That's Chicago?
That was 1846.
That's
good. 1842. No, that's too... No, it was...
1880, I think, right?
It's after the Civil War. How they got the name the Windy City?
I thought it was in... Like, if only we... I thought it was in memoriam of Columbus's arrival.
There was an exposition for that. But the Great World's Fair we're talking about in Chicago was later, I think. Because there was like the Columbiana Exposition or something.
World Exposition of 1851 was in London. 1853 was in New York.
Okay, so this is what it says about the Windy City. Because I think this will be, we could call the campaign world the Windy City.
Mm-hmm.
The Windy World or... So this is what it says about the name the Windy City. The city of Chicago has been known by many nicknames, but is most widely recognized as the Windy City. The earliest known reference to the Windy City was actually to Green Bay in 1856. The first known repeated effort to label Chicago with this nickname is from 1876 and involves Chicago's rivalry with Cincinnati. The term Windy City came to common usage when it was popularized by New York City editor Charles Dana in The Sun during the bidding for the 1893 Columbian Exposition. Chicago won the exposition, which did not please Dana. The popularity of the nickname has endured long after the Cincinnati rivalry and the Columbian Exposition ended. So, Columbus Expedition, an expedition arrives.
I like it.
Yeah.
Once again, suck it, Ohio.
Once again, as if that's like your catchphrase.
Once again, I mean, Ohio, suck it.
Well, it's kind of life's catchphrase.
God damn it.
All right, so let's... So, it's a Columbian Exposition.
Mm-hmm.
An actual expedition arrives.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll start referring to them as Columbians, even because we don't know what they call themselves. We only know
they
the
all
rules
died.
For magic. Yeah. Yeah, they all died. Maybe they had like dragons and like all these crazy magical creatures that just none of them could breathe our air. So
if only they had pigs and they wouldn't have gotten our diseases. Cool.
It's maybe call it the Windy World or the Windy Land. I don't know.
Windy World, I like.
Okay. It starts in America.
Yes.
But... America's a very international – in the 1890s is an international – you know, we're pretty close.
We had the World's Fair there.
Yeah, we're pretty close with France, you know, and we're kind of working things out with everyone else, you know. So
– Yeah, well, yeah, but at that point
– So America becomes the Wild West again, right? Or it's currently the Wild West.
It's currently wild because, like, most countries didn't even have an ambassador with America
right.
at that time. They're just like –
Well, and then,
but it spreads because there's a lot of international dignitaries,
yeah.
who are there and are able to bring things back with them. So maybe they bring books back with them that have magical powers that other regions won't have. So based on the kind of magic somebody's doing,
you could tell where they're from.
You know what country they're from.
So Chicago would rise as like
the magical capital of the world.
Yeah, the magical capital. But you know what would be interesting is that. There could be racial stereotypes based on what kind of magic they use, and that's what you'd call them based on like, ah, goddamn fire flinger coming around and trying to be my neighbor.
I was thinking you would go to pick your character and be like, do I want to be Irish, Polish, Italian,
yeah.
Jewish?
And it's like, what kind of magic do these races have? Yeah. Oh, this sounds awesome. Yeah. You give every race a different kind of magic.
Because you'd have Greeks there. You'd have, oh, man, so many different people.
And you could learn any of them, but yeah. culturally there's an affinity because of distribution. Because
you're playing on Earth. That's the thing. Like there are yeah. no other races. It's just
human race. And I assume it wouldn't be at that very time. So it's like – what was it? 1876 was the exposition?
1890-something.
Yeah, 1896.
1896. You could play at the cusp of World War One. Only there's magic.
I think World War One would be very different. I mean obviously – if you just add magic to World War One, it's very different. But, you know, like the causes for World War One,
mm-hmm.
like maybe, you know, Franz Ferdinand is shot for a different reason or hit by a fireball. That's how they know it was a Serb.
Or they get really suspicious when it's when it turns out there was a secret ice bolt before and then it was covered with a Molotov cocktail.
Right.
They're like,
Damn
Frenchies.
Yeah, but you had to bring in an ethnic Albanian to actually do the magic that would tell you
what kind of magic it was.
This sounds great. No, yeah.
I'm just imagining the world is like spreading out before me, and I'm like, damn.
Yeah, this sounds
what
amazing.
Country would just not refuse to use magic?
Germany.
No.
Oh, come on. With all the industrial changes they made during World War I, all the new technology they came up with.
All right, so the Germans are just like, no magic here. None.
What would you?
But isn't it a tech?
So it's
magic?
Like they're like the Muggles, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like damn mudbloods, and it's like, yeah, you go to shake their hand, and it's like some guys like, you shake my hand a certain way, you catch fire, and the German's like, I have an answer for that, and like shakes your hand, and a gun pops out, and he shoots you, and he's like, see, magic is useless.
Awesome. So the Prussians,
they stay the Prussians,
the Austro-Hungarians, all them. They're just no magic.
They just don't. They don't find it needed.
They're the Prussian Empire, and they double down on science and technology.
Did you see the destruction of Tsarist Russia? Yeah, when their peasants become magic.
Yes, yeah.
Prussians just become experts of super science.
Lenin becomes Lenin is like the real power is with the people. Magic.
Rasputin becomes like their greatest shame.
Afraid of that, Rasputin just becomes czar. Because if anyone already had magic, if magic ever could possibly be real in the real world, Rasputin had it.
Rasputin is like kicked out because he's everything they stand against. They kick him out of the country and he has to go somewhere else.
Maybe he finds out he had real magic, but because he used it to validate the office of the czar, he's in exile.
What if the czarina, like, starts making blood sacrifices for her
children,
her son who had hemophilia. So he just becomes like some crazy vampire because of these, like, that's the magic she seeks out is to
and it spreads from there. So now you've got Russian vampires. That sounds cool.
Russian vampires.
That's how Blade One ended.
Vampires are almost exclusively Russian for that reason, just because that's where it started.
Are we saying
so like Russian vampires are the new gypsies?
No, they'd be like, no. They'd be a tsardom because you would keep all the cool like counts and everything.
Do you guys ever notice the boy king never ages?
Yeah, stuff like that.
But imagine like a vampire fleet of battleships and stuff, like the Russian Imperial fleet.
Not during the daytime.
Yeah, they can't attack during the day.
They'd have sunscreen.
Oh, yeah, that's good enough. God damn it.
Motorcycle helmets. They'd be cool.
I hate that shit so much. So this sounds great. I'm into this. The more we think about this, the more I actually want to play this.
I felt this might
be. We got a module. Windy World.
We could roll out with three full modules, and that would be awesome.
So what happens to Chicago?
Oh, Chicago becomes the new everything. It would be the new center of the world.
Wouldn't there be another civil war, if Chicago is rising against Washington?
Washington was not the center of America.
No.
I mean, New York during that time was
still. And also, this is after the 1860s. Civil War already happened.
That's what I mean, but like...
He said it's another one.
Yeah. If Chicago is becoming this, like...
No.
They would cast off the federal government at all.
Well, it's interesting because maybe...
New York was bigger, but it wasn't like what New York is today.
No, I mean the actual government. Like, they're rising against the government.
Well, I'm thinking, what if a populist movement starts? Because we're like, we finished the Civil War, it's over, and you know what? We got a reward for winning. So the Union
was right.
Here's our reward. America's the strongest country in the world. But you know what? After that Civil War, there were some people looking at America like they were weak. Mm-hmm. Let's look at them now. So maybe they'd think Spain, England, you know, like
can you look up the Great Revival?
The Great Revival.
Yeah. See what time period. I think it was that same time period, but I'm not sure.
Was it a religious revival?
It was like huge religious revival across the country.
Well, that would make sense because then that probably led to Prohibition.
Yeah.
It's called the Second Great Awakening as well. No, it's both. Yeah, because the Great Revival verbatim is a Chinese TV show. Yeah, the Second Great Awakening was a Protestant religious revival movement during the early 19th century in the United States. So it's early 19th century. That's way too early for us.
Yeah.
So it started around 1790.
Okay. I was going to say, because we could just do that, but with magic. But
yeah, it was past its peak by the late 1850s.
Oh, okay.
Look for Third Great Awakening.
So yeah, we could call this the Third Great Awakening because it happens 40 years after.
Oh, there would totally be a religious movement directly against it. There would have to be in America.
I was like, if you're talking about, like, other than Germany or Prussian people being the only ones who are not down with magic, it would be the Vatican.
Oh, God, that would be amazing.
Yeah, no, Vatican's definitely out. And maybe, and yeah, and maybe the South is just like, we ain't need no magic.
But, like, new, like, so, but there'd be certain sects of...
I say, Quakers, I think the South would
Quakers
want the
don't
magic.
Like magic.
Well, I was going to say there'd be certain sects of Abrahamic religions that find certain texts that can be interpreted to reinforce the kind of thing that they're saying. Like, oh, this story is this. That's just their name for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their own crazy magical powers. And
then there'd also be a magical religion, right?
Oh, definitely.
People would just worship these beings.
Yeah. Well, cults would come up from nothing. If you were just really good at magic, you're like, I'm the second coming of God. People would say that all the time.
So this can't take place right afterwards. It has
no,
to be.
It's
let's say
be 10 years after.
10 years after. Now it's had enough time to spread out. Now the entrepreneurs can be like, look, casting magic is hard. We can do a thing that we have multiple people working together to accomplish this ferrying movement.
Well, and I imagine it also be a marrying of magic and technology. Like the more double downed the Prussians were on technology, the more they invent really new cool stuff to compete with it. And then someone's just like, magic and this thing.
Yeah. And if the Prussians find, like, they're not going to cast any spells, but magic brings a new resource that they can use technology to implement. So it is like a melding, but it's just science. It's strictly technological. Here's just a new resource and we're figuring out how it works. So the Windy World, now it needs to be a comedy of manners.
Yes. Your objective is to become rich, powerful, and get married.
Okay.
Like
the marriage thing is good.
It's to be a new world gentleman is like it's not
and,
just
and
enough.
And you are an entrepreneur, so you're new money and you have to find a way to ingratiate yourself
into old money.
Right. And
to
some
get
of them
capital to do more entrepreneurship.
And the old money that has magic is so not impressed with you.
Not at all.
But you have to come hat in hand. You know, it's like, I'd like to take your daughter out. You know, it's
but
like,
the old money,
I can tell by your accent, sir, you're part Indian. Get off my property.
Yeah. But the old money that doesn't have magic would be latching onto these entrepreneurs.
So hard. Yeah, because they're afraid they're dying.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, you'd get like desperate railroad tycoons.
Like, we're useless.
In frayed hats, you know, just like coming up to you and be like, listen, pal, I got some. I'm working on a really big idea now, you know? And they just have nothing.
Yeah, that would be because you would get with the railroads and then just make bridges, like railroad trestles and bridges, obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
You just take their trains and levitate them.
Yeah, you wouldn't even shape them like trains. You'd be like, everybody hop on the board.
But I mean, they would have all trains left over.
Get on my magic carpet.
In my thought of this, they're just steamboats with that just make portals.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know why, but they have to be giant Mississippi-style steamboats.
And when you go through the portal, it's like the cave portion of Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
There's a
maybe that's why.
There's a conductor on every boat.
Yeah. Like, no, apparently, we could make it where like going through the eddies of just dimensional travel is super hard. So you need a captain.
I was just going to say the reason why not more people do it is because if it is like the Willy Wonka scene, just using magic is super fucking scary to anyone who's not intimately familiar with it. So this could be them be like, no, we're gonna take the fear out of traveling. You know, like we're gonna make it calm, but you can't really because it's so horrifying.
What if the only magic you start out with is the ability to do this for people? So the members of your party were all independently before this just gondoliers.
Yeah,
So you're gondoliers, and you're like, if we work together, we could make a whole industry. Like, it's not just the horse and carriage in the park. We're actually doing this, and you guys are the only ones special and I.
But you need to forge
to do it.
But you have to forge your own waypoints that you own. You have to own your ports of call. You have to own your own waypoints.
Right. So it'd be interesting if the comedy of manners is your group having to pretend to be different people than they are, pretending to come from better backgrounds just so that you can ingratiate yourself to the political and legal gatekeepers. That would keep you from doing this.
And have others lie on your own behalf. You're like, okay, this is my port. This is where I'm finding a wife.
Yeah. You'd say, okay, Bob, Your name now
is Chester B. Arthur.
We're gonna drill you again. Where did you grow up? Who's your family? What part of the what part of the Hollywood Hills? You know, like where did you come from?
They can't teleport. They'll never find out.
Yeah. So by the time they figure out who you really are, we'll already be richer than them. So let's do it.
And when
it's like a long
Bob,
con, but you're actually legit.
But when Bob cracks under the pressure, it's the jig is up. Opens a portal, escapes.
Just portal bomb. He just drops through.
You get to a room and you're like, where the hell the where'd the oil magnate go? And you're like, I panicked. Where did you send him? Where did you send him, Bob? He's like, I don't know. I have no idea. All right, that's it, man.
That's it. Windy World.
Windy World. Now, okay, now let's go one last step. Who would you play in this? Of the gondoliers who's doing this, what's your guys' story? You get a moment to think about it.
I would be Shane McAllister, child of Irish immigrants who came over before the happening in Chicago. And yeah, gets magical powers and now is destined, he feels, to become more than the lower class brat that he was born to be.
I would also have an Irish guy who worked on the Transcontinental Railroad and sees the potential for the surplus railroad that is now obsolete.
I would be an ex-riverboat captain from Virginia who's used to going up and down the Mississippi. But once the happening thing happened, it was probably when he was like just starting as a captain. Like he was probably like 20 years old and 25. And now that he's older, he jumped into the magic part right away. But the problem with him is that he is only used to traveling illegally through other people's waypoints, like as a smuggler. Like he's never had to make his own waypoint. It's always just like, all right, well, they're not using that one, so I'm going to hop through that one. Like he knows where other people have their plotted out trails and stuff, but and he's just snuck through those for his own personal business, whether it's smuggling or transporting people.
Well, then I guess I would play a character who used to be a member of a family aristocracy, but then defected or went AWOL during the Civil War, so he couldn't return to his family. So he's the one who knows like the ins and outs of the actual aristocratic conversations. And he's since been working as a gondolier after joining and defecting from also the circus.
Nice. Oh, sweet. Anytime you throw the circus in, everything gets better.
So, well, unless it's something wicked this way comes.
Shit, imagine P.T. Barnum with this shit.
That'd be awesome.
That's the greatest show
on elephant
Earth.
Magic. That'd be scary if elephants learn magic and then they
not really. They don't reproduce fast enough for me to be afraid of them.
What if that was the magic thing?
They oh, damn it.
Topsy walks out and Edison just goes, lightning blast.
and then it breaks against a magical shield and Topsy says, not today.
It's so in Destiny.
Elephants
for
just become the Krogan of Earth.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. To Max's point, it's like, yeah, that's our new Sisyphus myth.
Yeah.
And then Teddy Roosevelt becomes like the guy who's going to be, oh, let's weed them all out. he becomes like the hunter. No,
he becomes part bear. So he could transform into a werebear. So he's the original teddy bear himself.
And then he rides elephants as cavalry because they're so plentiful now.
And when he gets shot during his speech, he gets up to finish it, just like in reality. But he's like, hey, you know what? It's only a bullet. And transforms. He goes, I think I could bear it.
And the audience goes
right to bear arms. And he rips off his sleeves. And he's got two bear arms.
Yeah, exactly. The Right to Arm Bears is an actual book. All right, guys. I think that's it. The windy world. So.
Nailed it.
That's our setting.
It was a rough start, but man, we hit it out of the park.
So if you guys want to use that setting at any point in time, please feel free and let us know how it went.
Yeah. Tell us how it went, please.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Have a good night.
Rock on.
And roll some dice for us.
Party on, Wayne.
Party on, Garth.
Thank you everyone for listening to Bad Storytellers, now presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream us from Google Play. I've been your host, Josh LaForge, and I'd like to thank my writing group again, Doug Banks, Liam Malone, and Max Wessel. Now remember, as listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow to find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming. Visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Bad Storytellers on all your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.